Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Planet Earth. This is Ferment About It, a podcast on all things fermentable.
On Heritage Radio Network, we're live every Monday at 7 p.m. I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi. If you miss us on Monday nights, because you're not, because you're here, you can always find us archived through iTunes and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Yep, so let's see. We'll start with a couple of announcements. So we're going to do another reminder about the Pour to Restore benefit, which is our friend Sean Torres' project. It's Pour to Restore is an event intended to benefit Staten Island University Hospital employees affected by Hurricane Sandy. All proceeds from the ticket sales will be donated to the SIUH Employee Benefit Fund. It's on December 23rd, 2012 at 120 Bay Street on Staten Island. Chris and I will actually be brewing a beer for that event. There's going to be at least 15 homebrewers, 20 plus homebrews. We'll maybe try to bring some special fermented stuff that we've been experimenting with at home as well. The other Hurricane Sandy Relief fundraiser that's going on tomorrow night, actually at the Brooklyn Brewery from 7 to 10 p.m., is put on by the New York City Brewers Guild. And it's basically 16 brewers. There are tickets left online. It's $40. So you'll get a commemorative glass, and you're going to get unlimited beer tastings from 16 breweries.
And so, 100% of all proceeds in that of your money goes straight to Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, that's actually going to go to Rockaway Surf Club, Red Hook Initiative, and Coney Recovers to benefit local Hurricane Sandy relief efforts. We're going to put all the links to these guys on our website either later tonight or tomorrow. It's fermentaboutit.com, just like the name of our show. But Pour to Restore is pourtorestore.com. And then the Hurricane Sandy Relief Fundraiser at the Brooklyn Brewery is, tickets are available at drinkforgood.eventbrite.com. And I'm sure they'll be available at the door if they have not sold out. Both should be excellent events.
Absolutely.
All right. So today we're back to beer. We're trying to do homebrew. So we talk about all things fermentable, but of course, Chris and I have a special love for beer and homebrewing. That's how we met. That's our main fermentation.
Absolutely.
Spent gallons and every otherwise. So tonight we're excited to talk.
Beer is the lubrication of social intercourse. And our meeting each other was no exception. But today we're going to talk about, you know, we're talking about homebrewing, and we're talking about, you know, if you're getting into this, you probably have a beer that you really like, that a commercial beer that you're buying on the shelf, and you're probably like, wow, man, I wish I could make this at home. And so today we're going to talk about clone brewing and brewing.
And our special guest is Tim Stendahl. So, Tim, introduce yourself, please.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming.
So my name is Tim Stendahl. I'm a longtime homebrewer. I actually used to work for a homebrew shop in Minnesota called Northern Brewer. It's since become a pretty significant online presence.
We love Northern Brewer.
Yep,
they're a great shop.
They're amazing. You know, really good people.
All things considered, my affiliation aside, it's a great shop.
Strong supporters of thebrewingnetwork.com too, which is a fantastic resource for anybody homebrew.
Nice. So I graduated from a small school in the Midwest called McAllister College, and McAllister tends to put out some people who like beer a lot. it's pretty remarkable, and not just beer, but wine and spirits. but particularly in the beer world, in the homebrew world, McAllister's put out some big people. Omar Ansari from Surly. He owns Surly. He graduated from McAllister. Chris Farley, who started Northern Brewery, he graduated from McAllister. The Element Brewer, he graduated from McAllister College. So and then pretty much everybody who worked at Northern Brewer when I lived in Minnesota went to McAllister College.
Your reunions must be awesome.
It's ridiculous. So I got into home brewing about my junior year of college when I was a cross country runner, and I would just buy all these different pale ales and IPAs and interesting beers that I never heard of, and I would crack them after these 14-15 mile brutal summer runs, and nothing was more satisfying than a pale ale after a 15 mile run in 92 degree heat. So I got more interested. I started learning how to brew, and I extract brewed for years and years and years. And then I got a job with Northern Brewer, and I learned so much. The guys that work there are incredibly knowledgeable. They know so much. One of the guys that was affiliated with Northern Brewer just started another brewery in Minnesota called Poor Decisions. A guy named Chris England, one of the most knowledgeable people about beer I've ever met in my entire life.
Oh, yeah, Chris England. We know Chris England.
Yeah, Chris England. Great guy. He's a surly guy. He will... He won't give you a straight answer about anything, but he's hilarious. A lot of really good minds in homebrewing came out of there. When I left Minnesota to start working for Union Beer, which is the company that I currently work for,
you guys distribute Wandering Star Brewing Company. Don't
we
you?
Do. Oh, we certainly do. Well, like I said, we distribute the best beers in the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So Wandering Star certainly belongs in that
group. The best beers in the world and Wandering Star too.
So that's how I got into homebrewing, and it's led me along a really a tremendous path of learning how to brew and being affiliated with wonderful breweries and learning some interesting stuff along the way.
So you have been, I guess you helped start a project at one of our local homebrew stores called Bitter and Esther's. They're also the only brew on premise store in all of New York City, maybe all of New York State. I'm not sure if there's another
I think
one.
It might be all New York State. There might be one upstate, but I know it's the only one within the New York City.
Yeah, tri-state area. Yeah. Like, tri-state area. Yeah.
Is that
and they're actually in Prospect Heights, mm-hmm. Neighborhood of Brooklyn, in case you haven't been out there and you live in the tri-state area. It's a great store.
So a brew on premise is where you can go homebrew, but at the store. So you don't have to take up your home space. You don't have to ferment mm-hmm. your home space. You don't have to have any of the equipment. You got people to guide you through and help you homebrew. So if you're kind of timid and you live in the area, please talk to John and Doug down at Bitter Nesters and maybe join Tim on one of this project, which is?
It's a clone brew project, basically. Right. What's it called?
It's called Brew Like a Pro, or as we lovingly call it, BLAP.
BLAP.
Perfect. And so how did this whole project start, I guess, and how did you get involved? What's the inspiration?
Well, I had the idea when I first moved to New York, and I saw the incredible portfolio that we were working with.
As a Union Beer rep.
As a Union Beer rep, correct.
They distribute Wandering Star.
And they distribute Wandering Star, which, world class.
Enough.
So I had this idea, and Union Beer was totally on board with a homebrewing club at Union Beer, but it never really got off the ground. So fast forward 2.5 years, I'm living in Prospect Heights. I get 2 or 3 emails from some friends and say, hey, is this you? And they post a link to a Gothamist post that says homebrew shop, brew on premise site to open in Prospect Heights. I lived at 663 Washington. They live at 700 Washington.
Nice.
Or they open at 700 Washington. It's literally across the street. So, as Doug Amport, who is one of the owners, Doug Amport and John LaPola, they own the shop and have been awesome, awesome guys with accommodating this, and like we've really become partners in this whole project.
Doug is awesome. He almost joined us tonight, but he's actually home babysitting.
Yeah. So
sorry for the late notice, Doug. I know you're listening. Thanks.
So I approached Douglas as he was sanding the floors of Bitter Nesters before they opened, because I'd heard about it, and he said, "Oh, that sounds like a great idea." So I started coming up with the idea and formulating the first 6 months of the Brew Like a Pro series, BLAP series, and so I was really surprised with how many breweries were so open to giving us the recipes and giving us the information that they have about the recipes, including like really specific information, mash temperature, ingredients, hop schedule, fermentation length, really detailed information. They're very, very open. So I kept reaching out to more and more breweries, and everyone was really on board with this because most of these brewers started out as home brewers, and it evolved into something more and something more, and now the craft beer scene is what it is, and they've become these really smart business people, as well as, you know, homebrewers, people who really enjoy the scene of home brewing and craft beer and sharing information. You see all these collaborative beers starting between, you know, all these different breweries, and that's a testament to how much all of these brewers are willing to share their skills and share their knowledge to just advance the scene and advance the knowledge. It's all about experimentation. It's about sharing. It's like a, it's like the open source.
It's also a testament, I think, to the skill of brewing. I mean, you can have a recipe and no brewer will. I mean, it's very hard for brewers to really replicate that. And I think we're gonna, we'd like to talk a lot about and how you're doing with that. I mean, you could have all the ingredients. You could do everything exactly. You know, specific, use all the specific ingredients, but there's so many variables in how you make a beer that it's hard to recreate.
It really is. That's kind of the epicenter of this whole project. It's not necessarily to recreate the beer specifically or so precisely that it's indiscernible, because there's so many factors that go into making a clone beer or making a beer that you are trying to replicate. Everything from the base malt that you use, if you use Rahr or
Maris Otter
or Bries or whatever base malt you use, that's going to change. It's like the way that I teach these classes, when I talk to people about base malt, I say, okay, well, Sierra Nevada has a pale ale, Oscar Blues has a pale ale, Victory has a pale ale, their Headwaters. All these beers are pale ales. They're called pale ales, but just because they're called pale ales doesn't mean they're going to be the exact same beer. So Bries, Rahr, Maris Otter, they're all called base malt, but they're not all going to lend the same attributes to a beer. So what we try and show people, and we always use Bries base malt at Bitter Nesters. So what I try and tell people is that even though you use a base malt or a two row or a six row, it doesn't mean it's going to be the exact same, because every maltster has a different process for making their malt, and it's going to lend a different flavor profile.
They're saying with different malt, different barley, different temperatures, probably different timing as far as germination.
And that's assuming that you had the exact same efficiency at both brew houses.
Efficiency being
how much fermentable sugar you're actually getting from this base malt. And you'll get different variables on that based on the scale at which you brew this.
And on top of that, there's the water content, the mineral content in the water. There's the aggressiveness of the boil, the length of the boil, which we typically get from the brewery. But there are so many factors that go into it that it's nearly impossible to recreate all the conditions necessary to make a clone beer that's going to taste exactly the same. So when I talk to the people that take these classes, that sit in on these classes, I don't say that we're trying to make the exact same beer. I try to explain that we're making a Bitter Nesters version of Smutty Nose IPA, of Victory Prima Pils, of Ballast Point Victory at Sea. And it might be very similar. It might be very, very different. Like with when Flying Dog, they sent us their yeast, guarded by breweries. But Matt Brophy, the brewer for, or the head brewer, the brewmaster for Flying Dog, he sent me two giant vials of their yeast for their Flying Dog Raging Bleep.
.org. I think we're allowed to do it.
So we, which I was blown away that he overnighted them to me so that it would be as fresh as possible. And the beer that we made turned out to be very, very different from the original batch. Or when Greg Dorsky from Greenport Harbor came and brewed the citrus IPA with us, it was completely different. And the brewer was there. And we hit our temperatures. We did all the additions at the proper times, but everything was very different. And that's the that's what I'm trying to convey to students, is that even though we don't necessarily make the same exact beer, it's a testament to the breweries and how consistent they are in making those beers on such a large scale. You know, we make 15-gallon batches, 20-gallon batches at the most. Yeah. And
at Bitter Nesters.
At Bitter Nesters, mm-hmm. Right. But you know, Sierra Nevada, Greenport Harbor, kind of on opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of size and scale, they're very consistent with the products that they brew. And that is the true skill. That is the true craft in craft beer, is that even though you have all these different ingredients and you have so many different components to a beer to make consistently, they're still making that same exact beer.
I always say it's really easy to make a beer. It's harder to make a good beer. It's really hard to make that beer again. And with that, we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be back on Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to I Get Pretty Upset by Space Disease on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Ferment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're speaking with Tim Stendahl today, and we're talking about clone brews. And specifically, we're talking about a cool program that one of the local Brooklyn homebrew shops called Bitter and Esters does, called Brew Like a Pro. And let's talk a little bit about the background. So basically, people sign up to take, it's a class, given mm-hmm. as a class. You contact the brewers, you get the recipe, you try to, you know, imitate the recipe, I guess. I know you guys are, you're not going for the exact product. And then the cool thing is, so everybody learns how to brew and then also how to brew this beer. And the cool thing is then you serve it.
We do, yeah.
So talk about that, because I think this is actually a really unique program.
So the way this this class works is I get the recipes from the breweries. We make two 15-gallon batches because there are two classes for each brew. And we put these on tap at two places around the city. We always do one at the local craft beer place called Washington Commons,
which is also in Prospect Heights.
It is, yeah. It's a local craft beer bar. It's a great spot. It has a back patio. It has a really cool feel to the bar. So and the owner is a really good guy, and he's mm-hmm. he's been very accommodating. But we get a jockey box, which is kind of a separate pouring unit for kegs, and the customers come and buy a pint or a glass of the commercial beer, and then when they buy that glass, they get a ticket for the homebrew version.
So they get to compare them side by side.
And you can see the similarities, the differences, and again, sometimes it comes out very, very good, and sometimes it comes out, you know, not quite as good, but I've never had a beer come out where I was like, wow, this is this is not that good.
It's just different.
It's just different, yeah.
Right.
And sometimes it comes out phenomenally well. Phenomenally well.
Do they ever, you know, do they ever surpass the, you know?
I never like to say that they surpass.
That's a trick question.
Well, it is a trick question. It's not fair. You know, there are two kinds of beer.
You also have to keep in mind that these beers are so incredibly fresh, whereas the beers that are coming from, that go through the three-tiered system and then end up, you know, maybe they sit in the basement for a little while. You don't know how old they are when you're pouring them. So, like with the Flying Dog beer, we had a super fast turnaround on that. We brewed it on June 9th, and we served it on June 21st.
Wow.
It was June 26th. But we had to cold crash it for 2 days and dry hop it for 10 days. So it was just, it was crazy fast. It was, Doug and John fermented it that morning. And
That fresh brewer's yeast, man.
Exactly. No, it was amazing. It was so good.
Yeah.
But Douglas and John carbonated it that morning. Jim Caruso, the owner of Flying Dog, owner and CEO of Flying Dog, was at the release party. And he is, for those of you who have never met Jim Caruso, seek him out. Yeah. He is one of the most inspiring and fun people to hang out with.
Yeah.
And he's just so positive and energetic. Tim, this is a great beer. I'm really impressed. You did a great job.
I feel like he should be selling juicers and ShamWow.
Tony Horton, step aside. This guy is the most inspiring person I've ever met in my entire life.
Exactly.
So to hear that come from the owners and the CEOs and the brewers, it's really nice to get that kind of feedback. If it were really, really bad, I'd be very embarrassed.
Right.
But that's part of it. I mean, that's homebrew. I've made some really, really bad beer, some real stinkers. But I've also made some phenomenal stuff that I'm really proud of.
Yeah.
And a lot of these clone beers fall into that category of just stuff that I'm very proud of. But again, it's not my recipes. These are recipes that are sent to me by people who have been doing this for years and years and years.
When I first started homebrewing in 2001, one of my first books I got outside of the Homebrewer's Handbook by David Miller was actually Clone Brews by Tess and Mark Simultuski. And I'd be remiss not to mention that because they have a bunch of really great recipes in there. And I think one of the great things about clone brewing and doing that, I mean, yeah, you want to be making your own recipes, and that's part of the fun, but you can learn so much from these other recipes about what happens and what kind of qualities and characters you're getting and how other people do it.
And it's a good way, I think, to learn your brewing system, because if you take a recipe from Clone Brews or Zymergy Magazine, the July-August issue every year has a lot of clone recipes. I know that Vinny from Russian River actually sent in his Pliny the Elder recipe in July-August of 2010, which is amazing that a pro brewer would publish his recipe for home brewers. But Zymergy Magazine always has great recipes. There's a lot of good recipes online. But I think it helps you learn your...
Jamil Zainashev has a show called Can You Brew It? And where he gets challenged often on brewing commercial brews.
Yep.
On thebrewingnetwork.com.
And it's a good way to learn your brewing system, too, I think. Because there's a commercial brewery that you really love, and you get a clone brew recipe for it, then, by working with that recipe, it's a good way to really tweak your brewing system, to get to know the certain ingredients and how they work in your brewing system. So everybody's efficiency is different. I mean, we've talked about the difference in malts and water, but also hops are different. I mean, alpha acids range from year to year and other characteristics. Efficiency, obviously, like we talked about. Boil, Tim mentioned before. All these things are different factors. And of course, fermentation. I mean, your fermentation vessel shape is important. The square feet. I mean, there's so many variables in fermentation alone. The exact temperatures, that all of these things make a difference. So I think clone beers, I never have been interested in making clone beers, but I think that it's a very interesting exercise in brewing, and it's a great way, especially if there's a beer that you've tasted, either you traveled somewhere and had it, or somebody brought it back for you. There's a beer that you tasted that you really loved and you cannot get commercially where you live. It's a great way to kind of, feed your passion for this beer.
Well, it's really been interesting to see the variability in the complexity of recipes that professional breweries send me. So there are some breweries, I've made a lot of IPAs because a lot of breweries' flagship beer is an IPA. And some of them are very, very simple. It's base malt, a little crystal malt, and really good hops. And then other ones are incredibly complex. Like Ballast Point Sculpin is one of the wackiest hop schedules I've ever seen in my entire life. They also sent me the Victory at Sea, their coffee, their vanilla coffee imperial porter.
Oh, yeah, that's delicious.
That was crazy. by the way, Joe Coffee, Amanda, oh, gosh, I can't remember what her last name now. The director of coffee for Joe Coffee, she gave me the coffee for the Victory at Sea vanilla coffee awesome. Imperial awesome. Porter. Yeah. So yeah. It was banging.
How many of these have you done with the program so far?
We started in February of 2011. Excuse me, November 2011 with Victory Prima Pils. They sent me the malt. They sent me home with 6 kilos of hops, which was way more than I needed. And then we did Smutty Nose, and let's see, we did November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June, July.
So you guys had just had your year anniversary, basically.
Yeah, we did. That's awesome. And we've done one every month. We're gonna go to one every other month just because it's gotten with two events and a brew day every month.
Yeah.
It got to be a little too much, and there was some fatigue, mostly on my part. so we're moving to one every other month. The December event was postponed until January because of all the holidays and because of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So the January event is going to be a barrel aging class. It's actually going to be more of a broad barrel aging class, but it's going to be in conjunction with Weyerbacher Brewing Company out of Easton, Pennsylvania. And then February is going to be Bronx Brewery with the guys at the Bronx.
Awesome. Chris and Damien.
Yep, Chris, Damien, Sean. We're going to be brewing both their pale ale and their black pale ale. And it's going to coincide
fantastic.
With their launch in Brooklyn.
Oh, that's exciting.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Heard it here first, folks. And then,
are there spots still open for those classes?
There are some spots still open. They've actually been pre-selling the barrel aging class because there's been a lot of demand for it.
Yeah.
So it's not even posted on the Bitternesters site because there was again some delay because of the storm. But of the two classes, we allow 15 people per class, and it's about half in each class so far.
Okay.
So good, great response to the barrel aging class, and then. In April, we're looking toward a couple different breweries. I don't want to say anything yet because we haven't nailed anything down, but it should be another hop forward class.
That's awesome. Yeah. Bitter and Esters, so you can get you can find out more information on this on Bitter and Esters' website, bitterandesters.com. And they actually did start an online site just recently, and they have a bunch of really great kits, both all grain and extract, that they'll be launching at the beginning of next year, among them Wandering Star Mild at Heart. Did I mention I work
Shameless
for Wandering
plug.
Star? but wow, I'm really excited to have the next. Where's the next event?
The next event is going to be at Mugs Ale House. We recently did an event or a brew with Stone. It's the first one that I've done that has not been with a brewery that I work with specifically. But Dennis Flynn from Stone has been again very accommodating. Great guy.
Love
him. But we did the Stone Smoked Porter, and we brewed the Stone IPA. So those are both going to be on tap on 12/12/12.
Nice.
It's awesome. It coincides with the Malted Barley Appreciation Society.
Perfect.
Hey.
Yeah,
the Christmas party.
Yeah, their Christmas party.
I don't remember ever going to a Christmas party, though. I think I've been to them all.
Yeah. and then the class with the barrel aging class with Weyerbacher is going to be the first Saturday in January, which I believe is January 5th.
I'd have to look that up, but that sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, if there are spots for the barrel aging, if you don't see it online, feel free to call Bitter and Esters and ask them about the spots, because that sounds like a very interesting class. We're going to definitely have a barrel aging show at some point.
Absolutely.
Chris and I still don't have a barrel. We were just talking about that the other day. We need to go to the Navy Yard and pick one up.
Now that we're domestic partners, I can drive your car and I get my own damn barrel. Exciting stuff here at the Shakuza.
Cohabitation is a glorious thing.
Yeah.
We have a lot of brewing to do together. We're a little behind from the unpacking.
Well, what can I say? I've been brewing.
Just not at home.
Yeah.
So Weyerbacher is actually going to be sending one of the representatives. Her name is Natalie DeChico. She is the reigning Philly beer geek. And she's
The actual competition, right?
From the actual competition, awesome. Right. And she's also one of the, she's either the president or just a member of the Philly Homebrewers Society, but she's a remarkable woman. She knows her stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love it. And that's all for us today. Thank you for listening to Ferment About It. Ferment About It over here. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Chris will be gone to Hong Kong next week, so I will be by myself.
What is the topic next week, Mary?
I don't have a topic
yet. But the week
it's
after that,
it's
going
to be something non-beer fermented. I've got some ideas.
But there have been some fun stuff.
We did, and then coming in 2 weeks, we're actually going to be talking about historical styles, which is going to be super exciting.
And I'll be calling in from Hong Kong.
Yep.
Be fun stuff.
Good night. Thanks for listening. And I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.